Welcome to today's episode of Conspiranormal, featuring your host, Adam Sain.
That's right.
Co-host Luke Reed.
Today I want to be Pepito Alvarez.
Okay. What's up, Pepito? How you doing?
Nothing much.
I missed you, man. We've missed you, Pepito, the last 2 weeks.
Man, it's hot outside.
I know, man.
And then you've got me, the man who finally decided to come out of this cave.
That's right. The guy who's over there selling some pizzas.
Yep, selling pizzas is all I do
selling
anymore.
Selling pizzas to the masses.
Slanging dough.
So,
I'm forgetting to turn my phone on.
Haters get mad because Chris got that tomato paste.
Pizza boy up in this.
So, home. Luke, seriously, missed you the last 2 weeks, the last two times.
Bro. Yeah, man, I appreciate that, Adam. Yeah.
And then everybody else missed you too. That's why we got 500 downloads on the last show.
Exactly. The show that I don't have my ignorant voice on.
Oh yeah, dude.
Ignorant stoner guy over here, co-host.
Really? But now it's gonna spike up, man. This show is gonna get 1,000 in 2 days.
You sure about that?
it's gonna exponentially double.
I was thinking more 25.
Anyway, we did have a great interview with the Tennessee Wraith Chasers and also with the Seekers.
Word?
Mirage and Che. They actually did a pretty good job. I was actually really impressed.
I suggested to them at first, and Adam was there, that they should be... I tried to combine the word oracles with the word girls. Let's call them aura girls.
Yeah, I don't think that really would work.
No, it didn't really have a good... ring to it.
Anyway, well, I was thinking of
Shay and Mirage, just and take the first two letters.
Shiraj?
S&M.
No, okay.
But nobody would take it. So
continue.
So they decided on the Seekers, Psykers. Anyway, Chris, how the hell are you?
I'm all right,
it's
man.
Good to see you.
I'm all right. Man, busy lately. You know how it goes.
Yeah, you slipping pizzas to the masses out there in Lebanon.
Man, I worked 20 days straight at one point, and I don't know if you've ever done that before, but it's probably the most not fun experience of your life.
That's the life of a Pizza Hut manager, man.
Yeah, well, you know, when you have a manager quit on you with 3 days' notice, it kind of puts you in a little bit of a bind.
Luke's been protecting hallowed grounds. He's been protecting.
And protecting
a local water park.
I'm ready to die for this job.
Luke's serving and protecting things, folks. It is official. Nobody is safe.
Yeah, it's true.
I sleep half of my shift.
It's pretty scary. Yeah, you just sleep and you drive around for a couple hours.
I look for meth heads.
Yeah, he actually does have another real job. So, you know, we're just giving
working for the finest guitar manufacturer in the world.
Yeah. Turn your phone off, Chris.
That wasn't me. That was Luke. And my phone's on vibrate.
Everybody's got droids in here. Well, anyway, tonight we're going to have on Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And I'm real excited about this show. Just read her book, The Gin Connection. Just finished it this morning. And it is a great book talking about the gin. That's spelled D-J-I-N-N. And that is a spiritual being that is supposedly, according to Islamic lore, supposedly neither angel or human, something in between. So got her coming on to talk about some of the connections with fairy lore and also Men in Black and alien abductions. And so I think it'll be an interesting show. Have you both back on.
Yeah. Is Will Smith going to be a special guest too? Because you mentioned the Men in Black.
Well, you never know, Chris. He might show up. I'm sure that Will Smith is going to call in and pick it Spiranormal. from L.A.
Hey, you know what? Stranger things have happened.
We'll just receive him on our landline phone.
That's right. He's on a film shoot.
He's going to Skype us. He's going to Skype us. That's what's going to happen there.
He'll be like, yo, this is Will Smith.
Getting jiggy with it. No.
I mean, we're all in a plucky mood tonight.
Anyway,
we're gonna have her on. I'm gonna try not to talk about Nephilim or reptilians. I feel like that's been beaten to death. Even though that's in the book, we'll try not to talk about it. So
we still gotta do a reptilian episode with my mom.
You need to get your mom on here. Like, tell us the whole history of everything. History of the reptilians, according to Luke's mom. Well, anyway, without further ado, guys, let's go to the interview. We'll call her in about a few minutes, and we'll be right back on Conspiranormal.
Woohoo!
All right, we are back on Conspiranormal. It's your host, Adam Sane, if y'all didn't know. And Luke
yes.
is here.
Yes.
As everybody knows, Chris is here.
Yes, I am.
The gang Chris, is all
special
here.
Special guest, Chris.
All right, and we have on the line Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And she has written a book, as we said in the intro, called The Gin Connection. And it is very interesting. Very frightening and just all around great book, and I'm happy to have her on. She's someone that I've listened to on many shows like Coast to Coast quite a lot. She's like a real stalwart of the paranormal world. She's been doing things in the paranormal field since the 1980s, and just want to bring her on. Rosemary, welcome to Conspiranormal.
Thank you very much, Adam, and Chris and Luke, it's a pleasure to be with you all.
Excellent.
Same here.
Pleasure to have you. I just wanted to get started. If some of the of our listeners may not know who you are, could you kind of go over who you are and what it is that you do?
I'm a paranormal researcher, investigator, and author, and I've been working in the field full-time since 1983. I've had a passion for these topics since I was a kid, like a lot of people who are very involved in this field. And my work encompasses all aspects, the light and the dark, the paranormal, the metaphysical, the mystical, the occult, ufology, cryptozoology. All of these things are interconnected. And I, over the course of time, I've written over 50 books on almost every topic you can think of. And maybe not an individual book on a topic, but and somewhere in my 9 encyclopedias, I've probably hit just about every topic there is. And I love the work. It's interesting. It's ever unfolding. You know, there's always another side to the mystery that opens up. Just when you think you've learned everything you can possibly learn, there's always something new that opens up. And I think it's very important for us to pay attention to the paranormal, to our experiences, and to integrate them into our worldviews of who we are and what we're doing.
Excellent. And so you have a book out called The Gin Connection, and it's all about the gin, and that's spelled D-J-I-N-N for the listeners. And just to start off, you know, get right into it. What are the djinn?
The djinn are a race of beings. They are, by our definition, supernatural because they don't have physical form like we do. But they live literally on the earth in a parallel dimension. And so we don't see them most of the time, but we have plenty of interactions with them in our paranormal encounters. They are capable of coming into this reality and shape-shifting into a variety of forms. In fact, in all of the lore that has been discussed and written about them over centuries, they are probably the master shape-shifters of them all. And over the course of time, in my research in the paranormal, I've looked at a variety of entities that we have encounters with. You know, there are lots of UFO-related aliens. There are reptilians. There are fairies. There are lots of demons. There are angels. Quite a lot of entities come across our encounter phenomena. And no one really talks about the djinn very much in our culture, and not because they're not here, not because they don't exist. We just simply don't know about them because we never really integrated a lot of information about them. In fact, the only way we know about them is as the genie in the bottle through the old Arabian folk tales. Genie is a corruption of the word djinn, which means the hidden ones. these entities are quite real, and even though they are more familiar to other people around the planet, that doesn't mean that they're not everywhere. All of these entities we encounter, they are everywhere, and we find descriptions of them in all mythologies and folklore and personal experience. Well, some years ago, and this is how I got started on the djinn, and I already knew about them through my research. Years ago, there wasn't a whole lot published about them in English. And but yet, you know, I knew about them, especially through my research and magic and sorcery and, you know, spirit summoning. But I started doing a lot of negative haunting cases, and I would get cases that nobody else wanted to deal with. And I started doing a lot of research on them. I call them now persistent negative hauntings, because these are the cases that have something very troubling to people. It's ongoing. Sometimes they're very intense cases, and they resist resolution. That is, any number of solutions and remedies can be applied, and nothing seems to stick. It was puzzling me what was going on in these cases. And are all of these troubling entities, are they all demons? Could they be something else? And in the course of putting ideas together from my research, I realized the picture that emerged for me was that the djinn are involved in probably a lot of these cases. There are no absolutes in the paranormal. You know, it's not a neat little pie chart. We can't give exact percentages and, you know, things like that.
Right.
But I would say that most of our persistent negative hauntings involve the djinn. And so from that that standpoint, then I began reevaluating a lot of my cases, talking to other researchers, people like John Zaffis, and who are in the demonology field, about their hard cases as well. And a picture emerged that was very consistent in terms of the what seemed to be the personalities of the entities causing the problems, the types of solutions that were applied that didn't work, the types that were, the kinds of activity going on. And over the course of years, I built up profiles and patterns that all point to the djinn. So that led to my first book on the djinn, which I co-authored, and that was called The Vengeful Djinn. That came out in 2011. And that was a book intended to acquaint the Western audience, especially the paranormal enthusiasts and investigators, that there is a player here in the landscape that we're overlooking. And it's been there all along. So we need to know more about the djinn, how they behave, and how we are able to deal with them, from mild cases to really severe cases. I think they're often mistaken for other kinds of entities because they mimic those entities. And now in my second book, The Djinn Connection, I've gone deeper into some of their hidden roles in some of our most disturbing kinds of experiences: shadow people, men in black, dark fairies, the ET abduction scenario especially. And also, going back to ancient times, to look for the tracks of the djinn in our accounts of gods and goddesses, ancient aliens, figures from the Bible, like the Watchers and the Nephilim, stories about visiting aliens like the Anunnaki. All of these things bear the hallmarks of the djinn. And I think that they have had a major role in the evolution and history of humankind. And we are dealing with a faction of them that is not friendly to us. In fact, is downright hostile. Now, I want to emphasize, as we get deeper into this topic, and then I'll, stop talking, you guys can ask some questions. I'm sure you've got a lot. That not all jinn are bad, just like all human beings are not bad.
Yeah.
But the ones who are interacting with us the most are the hostile ones, because they've got axes to grind. There are other jinn that don't seem to care about us very much, and they're not likely to interact with us. There are some that do seem to be helpful, although everything I've ever written about them everything I've read that's been written about them from all kinds of sources talks about them as deceitful, tricky, and not to be trusted. So we even have to put a question mark over the ones that seem to be good.
Right. The first that I had ever heard of the jinn was, I have a friend that has out-of-body experiences. And we were actually working with a man from the Middle East. He was from Jordan. And he told the guy from the Middle East about that, about his out-of-body experiences. And he said, well, you're just messing with the jinn. Don't mess with the jinn. And so I thought to myself, what is that? What is the jinn? You know, because he said jinny too. It's kind of like genie. And I had never had even heard of that before.
That sounds to me ever. Like a scare tactic to keep him from delving too deep in any kind of...
Well, possibly. Yeah. But I'd never heard of that. And then I heard you, Rosemary, on Coast to Coast when you had the first book out talking about the jinn. And it wasn't too long after that, actually. So it's something that really piqued my interest when that person had said that.
Well, the term jinny is actually singular. Jinn is plural. And jinnaya is often used to denote a singular for a female jinn. For the sake of convenience, and I think this is the way the lingo is swinging anyway, I have used the term jinn to be for both plural and singular. It's also translated as J-I-N-N and jinn for singular and jinns for plural. So there are a lot of variations of it. But, it's an interesting point about scare tactics. I've developed quite a few sources from Northern Africa and the Middle East. And that is the prevailing viewpoint is, look, it's all jinn. Don't mess with them because you're just going to wind up getting in hot water. This is actually the same attitude that many of our Celtic ancestors had about the fairies. Mm-hmm. The fairies were not cute little flower things. The fairies are, because they are still around. The fairies, from our Celtic ancestors' point of view, they were troublesome beings who had the ability to shapeshift and were hostile to humans and created a lot of problems. And the best thing you could do was just stay out of their way. And that is a prevailing attitude about the jinn. It's all the jinn. Well, I'm at this point in my research, I'm not willing to say that everything's jinn, you know, that all the entities that we deal with the exception of the angels, are forms of jinn.
Yeah.
But I can see how a case can be made in that direction. What I am saying is that the jinn are slip-sliding around in all of these encounters, and sometimes we might think we're dealing with demons, for example, when in fact we're really dealing with jinn. And they use their shape-shifting ability to stay hidden. The thing about, it's the don't go there sort of thing. We find that too in, for example, in Christian religion. It's like, the fundamentalists and the very conservative Christians will say, all of that stuff, ghosts, hauntings, aliens, it's all demonic. It's all from the devil. So just stay away. And everything's a deceit. Everything's an illusion. Well, there is deceit in the paranormal. Any paranormal investigator who spent any amount of time learns that very quickly. There is illusion, and there's a lot of trickery. But these are factors that we have to deal with. We still have to keep going. It would be a mistake to close the door and say, you know, we're not going to touch that, because these entities aren't going to stop. They're not going to stop engaging with us and interfering with us and interacting with us. Yeah. So we need to be as educated as possible, and we need to know how to deal with these situations when they arise. Some of them are fairly easy to deal with. You know, there are solutions that work and people get relief and everybody's happy. And then there are other cases that I have followed for years, and I really do like to follow cases for as long as I can, where nothing works permanently. There's temporary relief, and then things are back. Solutions work, and then they don't work, so you have to switch gears and try something else. And it seems like they have the ultimate upper hand. So we're in a lot of unknowns right now. And one of my messages to paranormal investigators is, we may not have very good answers until all of us are aware of these entities, or at least more of us are aware of these entities, and trying things out and gathering data and sharing our successes and failures. And that's really where we're at. It's a whole new dark closet of the paranormal that's opened up to us. And we have no pat answers for a lot of questions that come up.
Sure. I wanted to ask you, Rosemary, like, about the Islamic tradition. How are the jinn, how are they described? What are they described as being?
They are described as interfering entities. That these are a race of beings who were on the planet before we were, and they are capable of wreaking great havoc in life. They should be avoided. They can be conjured and summoned, and it's very dangerous to do that. The old Arabian legends that preceded Islam talked about them coming literally originating from the winds. They have no known form. No one knows what the true form of the jinn is.
Right.
They came from the winds. And like our view of demons, the things associated with them are usually negative. You know, they're the plague bringers, the bad luck bringers. They're vengeful because they're like us. You know, they have families and children and relatives. And if humans harm one of them, then their clan and family, they're going to come after you. They're very vengeful. So the attitude toward the jinn has always been steer clear of them whenever possible. Now, in earlier times, there were blood sacrifices made to them, just like human beings all over the place made blood sacrifices to appease the gods. And, for example, in some parts of Arabia, the jinn were said to live below the ground. And so blood was sprinkled on the ground to keep them happy. And this is a very interesting connection with the life force, because that's always been the biggest, most important thing that human beings can sacrifice to something else, to each other, and to the gods. And the jinn are still said to like that today. And my sources in the Middle East say the jinn will take blood sacrifice, and they take it through things like accidents and deaths and things that we might not, you know, it's not like, you know, someone laying somebody down on a stone altar and, you know, that kind of sacrifice.
I suppose that war would probably be a good means of sacrifice to them.
Yes, absolutely. And so we have to consider, well, are the jinn having a role in a lot of chaos and upheaval? Well, throughout history, human beings have summoned spirits and gods to aid in their warfare and to kill the enemy and whoever the enemy is. And we've called upon spirits to do that. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that those sorts of things still go on today, that the jinn are summoned and sent out to wreak havoc. And sometimes I think they're like the arms merchant who plays both sides of the fence. It doesn't matter who wins, they win in the end.
Right. They can cause conflict. A very interesting part of the book is talking about the shadow person phenomenon. And that's something that I think that you say in the book is just more than likely, it's probably always jinn. It kind of fits in with their kind of motivation. Can you kind of describe the shadow person phenomenon? It's something we haven't really talked about on this show, but it's a very interesting and frightening part of that book.
Shadow people are what really opened the door for me in terms of following other leads about the jinn. And that's a line of research that I've been doing now for about 9 years. Shadow people are, there are different kinds of them, but the core phenomenon that most people experience is a bedroom invader. And this is a dark form that appears in a person's bedroom, usually in the middle of the night, looking like a tall man in silhouette wearing a coat or a cape and often a hat. And sometimes there are eyes, like red eyes, but usually the figure is solid black, and it's tangible. That is, it's blacker than black. No matter how dark the room is, it blocks out things behind it, and this entity emanates hostility and malevolence. People describe them as pure evil. And oftentimes there's an effect on people. They're paralyzed in bed. They can't cry out or move. Entities will often just watch them and then disappear. Sometimes they will disappear when they're looked at, or they will disappear when the light, if someone is able to turn on a light. Sometimes they attack people. They will suffocate and choke and put a crushing weight on the chest. They will grab people and act like they're trying to pull them off the bed. They're also seen during the daytime. They can disappear in an instant. They look solid. They can disappear in black smoke, vanish into thin air, melt through the walls and the floor, go back into closets or under the bed. They're very frightening. Some of them are attached to people, and some of them seem to be attached to the land. That is, they lurk about in a house or a building, and the people who come and go from those premises experience them, but not anywhere else. And some of them follow people around from place to place. They're associated with bad omens, bad luck, health problems, relationship problems, harbingers of disaster. They're just plain bad news.
Yeah.
And this is one of the more underreported phenomena in the paranormal. I am convinced that shadow people far outnumber ghosts in terms of paranormal experiences. In 2004, I began studying these entities because all of a sudden I just got a lot of emails and inquiries, all describing the same or similar things. And it made me wonder. I thought, wow, what's going on here? I've heard a little bit about this kind of experience, but maybe I better look into it a little more. And that has led me now on this 9-year journey that has extended into every facet of the paranormal. Every time I thought I was done researching shadow people, I would find evidence of them somewhere else. And I puzzled over what they were. They obviously weren't ghosts because there was an intelligence to them. And most ghosts are just residues. They actually didn't seem like demons, even though they were dark and they seemed malevolent and even evil. They didn't act like other demon cases where there's a concerted effort for some dark entity to oppress and gradually take over a person, and it has religious overtones. And they weren't ETs, they weren't by our, you know, popular definition. Yeah. So what were they? Just some unknown entity that seemed to have an agenda with human beings. And once they seemed to want to frighten people. And I finally clicked on the djinn as the fit. And once I considered shadow people to be djinn, a lot of things made sense about the way they appeared, the kinds of things they do. And given the what we know from a long history of the djinn about their shape-shifting ability and the fact that they do like to remain hidden, this is a great disguise. You know, you're just solid black. And this ability to terrify people, I think, is a way of feeding off of us. It creates a rush of adrenaline, of emotion, all kinds of chemical reactions in the body. And I think that these entities are capable of absorbing all that and literally feeding off of that. Also, it would be part of the djinn agenda to want to frighten us. If they have an agenda of wanting to regain the physical realm, which I believe this hostile faction does, then they're going to look for any way they can to dislodge, disrupt, and harm people. They'll frighten us, they'll distract us, they'll possess us, and in the most extreme cases, I think they even kill us. But those would be extreme cases. There seem to be, if it were that easy for them to just do us in, they would have done it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I think that they have made various attempts to harm us in great numbers, and I do discuss some of that in the djinn connection. So shadow people, then, one of the things that I found in the course of my research, and this was volunteered to me, when people would write down their experiences, some of them would volunteer that they were also ET abductees, or that they'd had ET, some sort of remarkable ET experience.
Yes.
And This was at a far higher level than I'd ever gotten from, like, people who experience a ghost or a demon or something else. So I did a lot of research on that angle, and in terms of, like, asking people specifically about their ET experiences, if they had a lot of shadow people experiences. And I found a very disturbing connection between the two, which led me to then re-examine the abduction literature, which I was very familiar with, but I went back through it to cases going back to the 50s and found a tremendous amount of evidence for shadow people and for djinn, not only in terms of in their actual shadow form, but in reptilian form, and the djinn, the snake, and the reptile are among their favorite forms. And the behavior of some of these abducting aliens is very characteristic of djinn behavior. So it seems that a lot of abductees, and here again we can't say all abductees, and there's not even any way to pinpoint a percentage on it, quite a few ET abductees have shadow people experiences prior to their abductions. So what is going on there? Are the shadow people setting things up? Are they doing something to the person or the environment that's going to make an abduction easier? Are they spies? Are they like, the stalking figures? Who knows? Because the shadow people are not present when the abducting aliens come. It's a very puzzling phenomenon. But we find in the UFO community that people are so fixated on these abducting grays as some sort of extraterrestrial life form. I think we're missing the boat here. And we should be looking at interdimensional beings and shape-shifted beings as perpetrators of this activity against human beings.
That's what you posit in the book, is that there's this kind of, the alien abduction phenomenon is kind of like a spiritual thing that's going on, and the Jinn are more than likely responsible for it, because there's so much with like fairy lore and very similar things in fairy lore and similar things with UFO abduction phenomena.
It's amazing how interconnected some of these things are. And other researchers, you know, have realized a lot of these interconnections, but they haven't seemed to sunk in to the fabric of how we investigate, whether we're looking primarily at cryptids or ETs or paranormal phenomena. Yes. And yes, there's been a very strong connection that's been well demonstrated between fairies and ETs, and how it's just a matter of semantics and worldview, what label you put on it. Well, in both the Jinn connection and especially in the Vengeful Jinn, I draw the comparisons between Jinn and fairies. And it's astonishing how identical they are. In fact, they are so close that you could say they are one and the same. The Jinn have a stronger common ground with fairies than any of the other entities that we are familiar with in our encounters. So... Now, I'm not saying like the nature spirits and, you know, they're good fairies and all of that, but they may be something else. They may, who knows, those beings might have been mislabeled as fairies because of how we've seen them and encountered them, and that what our ancestors knew to be fairies, the frightening shapeshifters who were vengeful and who should be steered clear of, maybe those are the real fairies that are also the Jinn.
Characteristically, what are some things that are different between Jinn and just like your common Western demon? You know, dark energy surrounding somebody. How are they separate from, you know, a common demon possession?
Sometimes it's really hard to know the difference, and of course, as we've discussed, some researchers would say there is no difference. It's just, you know, a variation of Jinn. But in cases here in the West that we call demonic, and I really call them satanic demonic because they are so religious in orientation that when you say demon to people here in the West, they automatically think of Satan's minions who are out to... you know, get you to do things to condemn your soul. They want to oppress you and possess you, and in the process, you will be condemned to hell. And the experience of a gradual takeover from infestation to possession has a lot of very religious overtones to it, with blaspheming and... acting out against religious symbols and figures and that sort of thing. The Jinn can mimic that, by the way, and I do think that some of our demonic cases are Jinn cases, and maybe this is how the Jinn entertain themselves. But the Jinn can do all of those things. They can oppress people, they can possess people, and of course there are religious remedies in Islam against the jinn and the possessing jinn. And by the way, I do wish to make clear that all religions have effective measures against unwanted spirits, but not all of those remedies work all the time in all cases. So there really isn't a universal catch-all remedy that's going to win the day all the time. But jinn are much more self-serving. They have their own personal agendas against people. They're not acting under some sort of, you know, a blueprint of ultimate evil. It's they're pursuing their own agendas here, and they could be self-serving from, you know, just being a trickster or, you know, a criminal thug type, to wanting the life force, to wanting to have sexual encounters, to wanting to be part of this terrorist plan to infiltrate our reality and establish dominance of it. So all of those things can be going on. So there's not just one, you know, it's not a condemn your soul to hell sort of thing. Although in the Quran, when the jinn are cast out, and they are cast out because they will not bow to Adam, considering him to be inferior to them, they ask for a chance for redemption, and they are given to until Judgment Day to make their case that humans are inferior and unworthy. And in that respect, they are very much like Christian demons,
right,
who torment and plague and want to turn people away from the righteous path. The jinn are also the consummate deal makers. And, of course, there are pacts with demons. We have a history for that. But, again, it's or seems to be oriented toward this condemnation of the soul thing, whereas a jinn pact would be more self-serving. It would be, you know, how am I going to use you to my advantage? And that can be enslavement of you and your family and generations to come into the service of the jinn. Sacrificing your vital force or your life force. So those would be some marked differences between the two, and I think that's going to govern how a negative entity interacts with people. A lot of these things are not going to be evident right off the bat. It requires some time to observe and study also perhaps experiment with remedies before a good picture can emerge. Sometimes it seems evident very quickly if there are shadow figures involved. The classic shadow of figures that would likely point to the jinn. Activity that's goes in cycles as opposed to an unrelenting progression. It's kind of on again, off again. If there are more than one jinn involved and people begin having communication with them, they can play good cop, bad cop. So those would be some of the hallmarks that I've observed. And here again, we need more data. And we need to consider cases from the standpoint of jinn. You know, when we as investigators are approached to help in a negative haunting and entity engagement kind of situation, we have to realize that, well, it might be jinn, it might be demonic. There are even some fairies and troll-like beings who can cause a lot of very upsetting disturbances. There are also earthbound souls. And I do believe that ghosts are residues, period. And whenever you encounter even apparitions of death, interact, then you're dealing with spirits.
Yeah.
Spirits also have the capability of showing up like human apparitions and even in communication to provide quite a bit of convincing information. It's a stickier picture and a more uncertain landscape than we would like to think.
Rosemary, you mentioned something there in that last where you were talking about the sexual encounters, and I definitely wanted to hit on that, because that was probably one of the most unsettling parts of the book, is the djinn having these sexual encounters with human beings. That reminds me of stuff like the incubi and the succubi, that kind of lore as well.
Yes, there's a very ancient tradition for the djinn sexually engaging with human beings. This is another reason why I think we need to reevaluate our stories about ancient aliens and gods and demigods. And with the fairies, too. The fairies, from the beginning, have always had some sort of intercourse with humans to make hybrids. And we find in ancient lore that there are supposedly hybrids on the planet, and that the hybrids have the ability to pass as humans, but they have the powers of the djinn, which makes them especially dangerous.
Yeah.
So there are these traditions for people to have lifelong companions called the Karin and the Karana. Excuse me. Who are with a person from birth, much as we might think a guardian angel would be. And some of them are good and some of them are not so good. They have other characteristics like the daemonus of the ancient Greeks, who are also good and bad and tried to sway people one way or the other. So these companions often develop romantic attachments to people, and they want to keep humans out of the picture. In fact, they will work to disrupt and even destroy human romantic relationships so that they can have the person all to themselves. The djinn who want to have sex with humans usually will appear in very alluring, erotic ways to have the person let their guard down. And the sex can be very real. You're dealing with a non-physical entity, but the sex feels very real. And it can be quite pleasant. There are other kinds of sexual encounters that are more like the incubus succubus, more of a forced rape-like kind of experience.
Yeah.
And the there are versions of this sort of thing that go on in the abduction scenario as well, where people are taken to strange places that appear to be, you know, the inside of some kind of craft, and they either have their genetic material removed from them mechanically, or they are approached by humanoid entities who come and have sexual encounters with them. I think these sorts of interactions have gone on throughout human history, and that there have been beings, and I'm including the djinn among them, who've been very much involved with genetic tinkering with us. And the djinn could have been significant in that regard. I think we've been genetically manipulated. We might have been even seeded by other races. Who are experimenting with us, and sometimes, it doesn't seem like it's going very well.
So, Rosemary, you don't discount that there may be, like, true ETs that are here?
I don't. Okay. I think we have to be open to all possibilities, and I certainly can't rule out that there are beings from other planets who have mastered time and space travel to be able to visit our world. I do think that most of what we call ETs are probably coming from other dimensions, and that's what makes them seem tangible but also intangible at the same time. They pop in and out of our reality, or they find ways to deliberately visit our reality, and then they retreat to their own dimension, which is why we have so little hard evidence, and also why there is such an uneven playing field in how these things are experienced, that some people seem to experience ETs and UFOs and mystery lights in the sky quite a bit, and other people never do, even when there's a major flap going on. And it may be that there's something in what I call our psychic DNA, our consciousness, something we're born with or we unconsciously develop, that gets tuned to certain subtle frequencies that have to do with these openings of interdimensional windows and portals.
So you wouldn't necessarily, it could be like myriads of creatures that are coming through.
There might very well be a lot. And in fact, when I've interviewed people who live in very active areas, these portal areas, they have the sense that there are all kinds of things coming through. And As I said earlier, at this point in my research, I can't consider everything. I can't just write it all off as gin, you know. That
right.
These are like, for example, 50 different kinds of gin coming through. various people in ufology have described and documented and categorized different types of beings, and dozens of them. And are they really dozens in number, even more than that, or does it have to do with our ability to perceive them or the way entities want to shapeshift? We don't really know, but there do seem to be a variety of entities involved. Now, whether the jinn are working with them or against them, that remains unknown as well. If the jinn have an agenda for the Earth, and visiting aliens have their own agenda for the Earth, that could be in conflict. So we only know a fraction of the picture. We know that there are hostile entities who are capable of abducting us, who have power over us, who can paralyze us, mesmerize us, interact with us any way they seem to choose whenever they want, who seem to be interested in hybridization, and nobody knows really where it's all going. Yeah. Some of the ET abductees are given stories like the aliens have sickly babies, or you know, they're here to do, you know, they're the space brothers, they're here to do wonderful things for us. I don't think either of those stories are the right ones. I think that these hybridization programs are aimed at infiltration of the Earth, and that we already have hybrids on the planet. We probably have different kinds of hybrids on the planet.
Let me ask you, Rosemary, about Men in Black is one thing that you talk about in the book, but also something that you don't get into in the book, but has kind of been making headways around the paranormal community right now. And we actually had someone on who wrote a book about this, is the Black-Eyed Children. Have you heard of this? Do you think that there may be a connection?
Yes, and you must have had David Weatherly on.
Yes, that was who it was.
And his book is phenomenal, Black-Eyed Children.
Yes.
It's a definitive work, and I know David's getting ready to come out with another book now where he's deepening his research as well. I'm looking forward to it. I've met David, and he and I are on the same page in a lot of areas. You know, we've been looking at these entity encounter things from a lot of perspectives for a very long time and building up profiles and patterns. And I consider the Black-Eyed Children to be good candidates for a form of jinn. It would fit their modus operandi. They have some of the hallmark characteristics that shadow people have, for example. People who have encounters with them suffer as a result. They feel their life force taken. They have bad luck. They have health problems. Their life falls apart. And the Black-Eyed Children could be yet another form that the jinn are using or maybe even experimenting with as ways of getting at us. And I know that David has compared them to, you know, the devil and demons and men in black and fairies, and all of these things are interconnected. We could just be dealing with constantly morphing forms of, you know, some great Oz behind the curtain. And, of course, from a Middle Eastern perspective, that Oz is the jinn. So that's my take on the black-eyed children. I have collected some cases myself, not nearly as many as shadow people. I have in the hundreds of those. But I believe that the way they behave, it more suits the jinn than demonic cases, for example.
The black-eyed children is kind of a new phenomenon. It's something that hasn't been around for too long, probably really within the last 20 years, which in the paranormal realm isn't a very long time.
It's not, and I know some people say that it's all made up. I don't think it's made up. I think it's yet a new wrinkle in a very old cloth, and that if you look at the whole spectrum of these kinds of encounters, especially what we're dealing with here, the dark side encounters, human beings have had them all throughout history. And even though the trappings change and the forms change and our names for these entities change, the core experiences are still the same. Interfering entities who create havoc with human beings. And sometimes in minor ways and sometimes in major ways. It's like an ongoing negative harassment, which is not uniform in purpose. As I mentioned earlier, I think there are a lot of different agendas going on here.
If you were to apply like a hierarchical system of power to all of these beings that we've been discussing throughout the show, what do you think would be like toward the bottom as far as like the possessive power? You know, for example, like maybe a ghost at the bottom, as you were saying, they were kind of like a remnant or whatever. And at the top, you know, jinn being the most powerful.
Well, I would probably have to put, I would have to put an unholy trinity at the top, I guess. I would put the jinn, ETs, and I would probably have to put fairies up there too, because the fairies, the jinn have such a similarity to the fairies, and the fairies have such a similarity to the ETs. And if shadow people are jinn, which I think they are, then we don't need to separate them out. Mm-hmm. Those would be the three most powerful forms of entities that we are dealing with that cause us the most havoc. And I don't mean to leave demons out of it, but
yeah.
I think a lot of demon cases are really jinn cases. So, you know, where all that fits together, I think, mm-hmm. remains to be seen. But I think the jinn are far more capable of causing serious long-term problems than what we see in demonic cases, which there are demonic cases that can go on for years and that also are subject to recurrence. But I think the jinn really have the upper hand there.
Okay. You also talk about, Rosemary, kind of this, the idea that possibly the jinn may have been behind the Black Death, the kind of the going out in the field and using the rods and things.
With the mist
cloaks
coming from the rods? Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting scenario, because if the jinn have an agenda to reassert themselves in our reality, it would be to their advantage to either subjugate us or get rid of us. And as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, if they could do it, if they could get rid of us, they would have done it a long time ago. So
yeah.
They're obviously working against either spiritual laws or impediments or something that prevents them from doing it on any large scale. but it doesn't mean that they haven't tried. And we have in the ancient lore that the negative entities, including the jinn, are plague bringers. They bring the epidemics. They bring, it's the ill wind that blows across the land. That was literally the jinn in really ancient times. And so we have, these epidemics that have gone around the planet. And William Bramley, in his wonderful book, Gods of Eden, talks about these shadow figures who were seen in towns and villages prior to outbreaks of the Black Death, the plague, and that these were mystery figures. You know, back in those days, if you lived in a small community, everybody would pretty much know who everybody else was, and strangers would really stand out. So these were black-robed, mysterious humanoids who would suddenly appear in a locale, and they often had these like long brooms or tools of some sort. They could even be seen out in the fields, or they would knock on the doors of people, and then those people would get sick. And there have been comparisons of these figures to, demonic figures, the Grim Reaper. But since jinn are shadow people and they like this mysterious dark form, suddenly it's a very interesting picture to consider those figures jinn sowing the seeds of the plague. And how prevalent was that? We have only a handful of accounts, of existing accounts, mostly in Germany and Central Europe, of these beings who just showed up and were precursors of the plague and were often blamed for the plague. So it's an interesting idea. Was this a jinn-engineered effort to try and wipe out a lot of human beings? Now, I'm not saying they started the plague, but let's say the plague had its origins and got going. Well, the jinn are opportunists. They could have jumped on board to seize an opportunity to maximize the effect and the havoc.
Sure. Or just to create some kind of psychic turmoil that they could feed off of.
Yes, absolutely. And, that whole death energy and people suffering. I believe that they are probably players in a lot of the chaos in the world today, and they probably have been throughout history. That if they have the ear of someone, or if someone sells out to the dark side to try and gain the upper hand, they are capable of magnifying the destruction of conflict and warfare.
Rosemary, have you ever had experiences with a jinn directly
yourself?
I was
going to ask the same thing.
yes, I have. And in shadow people form, and also as invisibles who do things. Once you start studying these entities, whether it's demons or jinn or the ETs, the ones that are messing around with us, you get on their radar and you never get off. So some of them have been, troubling experiences. Sometimes, I have not taken cases because I just felt that the beings involved were well capable of just demolishing everybody if they got mad enough. And, I would make recommendations for, just somebody else who's better able to handle something like this. They're extremely powerful jinn, and they should not be taken for granted, and they should not be trifled with.
Yeah.
some of them are, you know, low-level trickster kinds of beings. They vary in temperament and power just like human beings. But the Middle Easterners who have dealt with them through sorcery and magic and conjuring and that sort of thing, they understand the different levels and the hierarchies, and it takes a great deal of skill and bravado, I think, to deal with some of the really powerful ones. Just like there are very powerful demons too that are difficult to deal with.
Well, Elizabeth, there's so much that we could talk about. I think there's also a connection with Aleister Crowley and black magic. You have a whole section in the book about life force and how the djinn can kind of leech off of that in a way.
It is very important to be educated about those things. And I would like to mention my websites before we go.
Sure,
visionaryliving.com is my main website. And for an eye-opener on the djinn, I recommend my site, djinnuniverse.com, djinnuniverse. It's an educational site, and I have collected hundreds of accounts from people who've written in to share their stories about the djinn. And there are some real hair-raising accounts there that I think are quite illuminating. So I recommend visiting those two sites. The Djinn Connection is available on my websites and also on Amazon as an ebook and in hard print form.
These stories are things that people have sent to you since you published the book?
Yes, I set up djinnuniverse.com in 2011 when The Vengeful Djinn came out. And I wanted it to be a site about the djinn that, you know, here's, if you want to know more about the djinn, here are more things to learn.
Yeah.
And so since 2011 now, people have written in from all over the world, some with questions and many with comments about their own experiences. And I have people from the Middle East who've chimed in, Australia, United Kingdom, North America, just all over the place about how the djinn have interacted with them and some of the problems they've had.
Well, Rosemary, I can't recommend the book enough to people. I think it's really important. I think it's a great work, and it's extremely easy, fast read. And I think people will get a lot out of it. It's a subject that we don't hear too much about in Western culture.
Well, I'm at work on another book, and I'm sure others will be coming out with books as well. And I really recommend that people who are involved in the paranormal look more deeply into this topic and consider it as part of a landscape that they're dealing with.
Well, we're going to close out this section, Rosemary, but stay on the line for us. And guys, if you guys got anything else to say?
I don't believe so.
Alright, we'll be right back on Conspiranormal.
Talking about the boys round here, drinking that ice cold beer. Backwoods legit, don't take no spit. Chew tobacco spit.
Oh, God.
Right. We are back.
Why?
On
Conspiranormal.
thank you, Luke, for that wonderful serenade.
Oh, man.
I didn't want to say shit, so I said spit. I was hesitant.
Okay. Anyway, I think they probably say spit in the song.
Yeah, they chew tobacco spit.
In the song!
Chew
yeah,
tobacco,
country!
If you want to call that a song.
Yeah, oh my
in
God,
all seriousness, so what did you guys think of Rosemary Ellen-Guiley, what she was saying?
It was pretty informative because I didn't even know what the djinn... Well, I heard about it. I thought it was really just like a Mid-Eastern entity, and that's it. And I figured that was the only area that they had to deal with it.
Right. Well, I think what it is more like it's different cultures have different words or different names for probably what is essentially the same thing. Mm-hmm. She was saying that, you know, that there's many different kinds of entities, but I think in that case, she makes a pretty good case in the book for fairies and djinn being kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, some of the fairy stuff that she talked about in that book, like, we're not talking about Tinkerbell here.
Yeah.
We're talking about some mean little nasty gods.
If you have a fairy godmother, give it up now.
I happen to like the fairies at trolls. The Renaissance Fest, so don't ruin that for me.
Well, those are different kinds of fairies.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Chris, you got any insights on them, man?
Man, it was like Luke was saying, you know, I really didn't know too much about djinn or anything. I've heard of them before, but it was very informative. You know, I learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you here, Chris.
Yeah, well, you know.
Perchance you may be here next time?
Perchance, maybe.
Okay. Perchance.
Wow. Perchance.
Fancy lad.
So Adam, why don't you kind of touch on the next guest?
Okay, well, that will be Adam Gilrightly.
Yeah.
He's coming back. You'll be back for the third time.
I got to come back for Adam.
Yeah, you got to be here for that, man. Because that is going to be show number 33.
More psychoactive.
As we know, is the as we know, is the magic number. We talked about the number 33, 33rd degree parallel, all kinds of stuff on former shows with him. And then the next week with Scotty Roberts. So being that this one here is show 32, next week is show 33, I thought, you know, perfect to bring Adam Gilrightly to talk about the King Kill Conspiracy, 33 degrees.
Would you be against me actually being on mushrooms while we're doing this interview?
It might make things more interesting. You never know. bring in some psychedelics.
So, I mean, I think that might be a good idea.
Chris will just start talking about like eating a salad out of a baseball cap or something.
As long as I don't see aliens again, because that was weird.
You saw aliens on
I saw green aliens. They had tentacle-like faces.
Really?
Yes, and sweet. I thought both of my snakes were going to eat me. So,
man, you've had more weird experiences than me and Luke combined, and you're the one that's like a whole total skeptic and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's because it's drug-induced. He knows.
Yeah. Well, he did have that one shadow person experience at one time.
That shadow person experience was not a fun time.
Was not drug-induced.
No, it was not. I wasn't even drunk that night, which, yeah, we all know is a miracle. But, you know.
So you had some entity try to pull you out of the bed by your feet or something like that?
No, it was just like a very, very crushing weight, like holding me down. You know,
sleep paralysis kind of thing.
Yeah.
You thought somebody had broken into your house.
Yeah,
initially.
I actually thought
that you had left the door open, or you didn't have a doorknob or something.
My mom.
I actually didn't have a doorknob at that time, so that kind of made sense.
My mom had her story about all that too.
She seemed like shadow people.
Shadow people, yeah.
Yeah. What did she say about it?
She said she was she was real bad congested. She couldn't breathe really well and stuff from some kind of sinus infection or something she had. And she woke up with sleep paralysis, and there was like a slender man or whatever at the end of the bed.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And
sounds about right.
It was like keeping her from moving. She got real scared and stuff, and like started praying or whatever she does, and he disappeared.
Something we did talk about with Rosemary, because we kind of ran out of time, was this whole idea of like the scuttlers. And she relates this story in the book about these guys in Ireland, Northern Ireland, that had like pirate radio stations, like in the 80s and the 90s, and they noticed that things were going wrong with their pirate radio station, so they would go up and open up these, you know, the electronic devices. Chris, you probably know a little bit more about what goes into doing like, you know, transmitters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They would open it up and they would see these little like shadow spiders and crabs kind of scuttle out of the way.
What?
Yeah. Really strange stuff. And they said that was something that was like, that was the djinn messing with it. You know, it makes me think of like the gremlins in like World War II, messing up with machinery and stuff like that.
That reminds me of something. I hate to interrupt. That reminds me. I had someone try to tell me that I need to watch a movie. It's called Apollo 18. I've never seen it in my life. But they were explaining to me about how this movie was about these people that go to the moon. Yep. No one knows they're there. and they start seeing these rocks turn into like spires and they eat you from the inside out. And then she was like, it's based on a true story. What?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
But you know how movie marketing goes.
Yeah, but,
you know, but say, based on a true story.
Yeah. Based on a true story of people getting eaten by spider rocks on the moon.
Right. And then, and like a man, next thing you know, guy's like flying around in the sky or something by himself.
I mean, it,
based on a true story.
Man of Steel, based on a true story.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even in this case, like nobody got eaten by the like. "Quote unquote scuttlers," you know. They did say that they felt like they'd gotten possessed, and there was all this kind of weird stuff about the nature of reality, and it was just interesting. I mean, we didn't get to touch on that, but it was really, really strange.
That's pretty ugly. Yeah. Little ghost spiders. It's not bad enough. Yeah. Like I've been walking through the woods all day and getting real spiders all over my face.
Right. And then people say that they see the shadow person experience that they'll see spiders. And things like that on the wall. Large spiders.
Yeah, see, I've never understood, you know. Actually, I take that back. I take back what I was about to say. I was about to say, you know, it's always like a spider or a serpent or a dog. And then I was like, then I realized cats are in there too. Because, you know, familiars, you know, are often considered cats.
Well, there's also a lot of that alien abduction stuff too. People say that they see owls is a big one. The owl thing we talked a little bit about that with Nick Redford a few shows ago.
Mm-hmm.
And raccoons are another one, wolves are another one, but owls seem to be pretty common, and there's all kinds of weird associations with owls, like, you know, the symbol for Molech and the Bohemian Grove and all that stuff.
You know what else is interesting about owls? This is totally like 180 too, but
it's okay, man.
I've met like quite a few girls who are obsessed with owls.
So am I.
You know what I mean?
So am I. There are a lot of women obsessed with owls.
Owl necklace, owl purse, owl wallet, owl shoes, everything, you know?
My owls, it's funny that you say that, because my grandmother actually has a piece on her wall. It's like a 4 foot by probably about 3 feet rectangle full of owl figurines. I'm just like,
They're cute and everything, okay. But...
Right.
Another thing too is, like, you know, I was like, well, maybe it's this person's spirit animal or whatever, but she seems nothing like an owl. She like doesn't have any owl characteristics, and that's what's strange.
Yeah,
that's, I don't know.
I ran over an owl one time.
Cool.
People can say that was like my alien abduction experience possibly, but I'm pretty sure I just ran it over.
I ran over a rabbit once because it just like kept running in my lane.
Well, rabbits are pretty stupid.
Just ran back and forth.
Rabbit's not exactly a symbol of wisdom.
Yeah, no, it's not.
It's a symbol of fertility, though.
Well, guys, we're gonna have to run because Luke's got to get to his job
protecting and serving,
protecting the water park against the gin.
Observe and report.
Protecting the water park from people like me who tend to sneak into pools and other places right. That they shouldn't go.
Most of the time, I just let them do it.
Yeah, that's good to know. That's good to know.
I'm going to post this online. Put that on the Facebook. It's Paranormal Facebook page.
No.
Hey, you can get away with it at someone said.
You got to let me know. Park. You got to let me know which night you're working so I know which night is cool to jump
in. The only thing I don't like is people doing drugs up there.
Yeah.
What?
Don't do drugs.
Hard drugs.
Oh, hard drugs. Okay, I was about to say.
Well, Chris, take us out with some words of wisdom.
Oh, man. What?
Put you on the spot.
You gotta put me on the spot like that?
Yeah. Dead air.
I don't know. Like, I don't really have any words of wisdom this week. I've been pretty stupid all week, so. All
right. That's a good word of wisdom, isn't it?
There you go.
All right, guys. Well
don't be stupid.
We'll be back in about 2 weeks, everybody. And until then. See you next time on
Conspiranormal.
I think I'm going swimming tonight.
Death, death, not death.